Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, it has turned back to chill winter conditions here, so I have gone to the desert this week. Today, we have a double feature for you that will have you looking deep into the past, the present, and the future. This first episode of Desert Oracle Radio was produced by Ken Lane on February 10th, 2022. It's titled, An Obituary for Wisdom. There's a lot to think about in this one.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. An adoration of Ra, ever-living, O solar god who creates by utterance. O Lord of the sky, giver of light. Lord of the unplundered tomb, who gives life to those who acknowledge him. O heavenly Father, may I enter your kingdom of light, having been justified before the tribunal. The birds in the trees exalt your name. The bulls of the field dine on your radiance that causes grasses to germinate. Distant lands echo your great mind and envy your followers. O Ra, Lord of Light, giver of life and taker of it, cast your light of peace onto this world. Hail Falcon, son of Osiris, son of Ra, beloved one of Golden Crown, conqueror of evil, destroyer of the wicked, conqueror of the living. I have come forth, justified in your presence. For I have conquered our enemy who invaded our lands. His chariot is broken, his bow cast down, his dagger sheathed, his severed head beneath your sandals. His army is destroyed, and those who worship him have fled into the wilderness. Hail Horus, god of light, lord of divine vengeance, and god of the just. Knight of victory, emperor of the population. Hail Horus of the horizon, Horus of the two lands, Horus of the womb, Horus the child, Horus the great, Horus of the moment of conception, Horus the Christ, hail unto you. O Horus, guardian of the people, grant us divine protection, for we are your followers and serve you in the temples. I have given bread to the hungry man, and water to the thirsty, and clothing to the naked person, and a boat to the shipwrecked sailor. I am Horus and glory. I am the Lord of Light. I am the victorious one. I am the heir of endless time. I, even I, am he that knoweth the paths of heaven. Love is one thing and knowledge is another. For every joy there is a price to be paid. The inner light grows in silence and concentration. To know means to record in one's memory, but to understand means to blend with the thing, to assimilate it oneself. True teaching is not an accumulation of knowledge. It is an awakening of consciousness. Steps on a lifelong path. What we've most lost, this unnecessarily dull world of today, obsessed with its own passing traumas, is the goal of wisdom. We have endless opinions about everything. Endless reactions to reactions to reactions. Enough for a reactor core meltdown. We worship crypto and various podcasters of all things. We worship corporations and celebrities and government kill squads, as long as they're on our side for the moment. We worship institutions created and operated by flawed humans, just like ourselves. We believe having the right likes and dislikes equals having a personality, so we can fit within a social group of real or imagined people. We are compelled to be outraged, shocked, or even gobsmacked, in the British tabloid term that crept into American social media language with nobody bothering to wonder why. We are either angry about a people's uprising in Portland, Oregon, or a people's uprising in Ottawa, Canada. And never does it occur to us that they are exactly the same expressions of discontent and dread. Some of us worship policemen. The dumbest and meanest part of the human workforce. And some of us demand basic civil order be ignored for an ever-growing variety of human-caused disasters. Some of us believe 5G cell phone protocols will infect us all with a brain virus, while we ourselves refuse to ever put down the idiot phones we not only carry willingly, but at great monthly personal cost. And somewhere out there, shouting in the ruckus, are actual radar scientists pleading with the Congress bribing telecom corporations to please not turn on the 5G towers around the airports, because it's gonna make the planes fall out of the sky. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist monk from Vietnam, who unintentionally spawned a crass, empty-headed global industry in mindfulness, passed on last month after a long and meaningful life. That inevitably, in the stunted minds of mass media employees, was reduced to a few historical photo ops with other great protest leaders. Well, Thich Nhat Hanh spent this lifetime gently and persuasively encouraging people to be more cognizant of where they were and what they were doing, to live consciously in the moment, not in the sense of a hack slogan on a pillow at a Joshua Tree Airbnb, but as a meaningful and instantly available practice for whenever the mind wanders away from whatever's at hand. Wanders away instead to whatever we fear or think we desire. He was, I believe, one of the last people on Earth who was known and celebrated or his wisdom. Wisdom is not being the loudest voice regarding whatever momentary outrage, regarding the daily sewage flow of controversy and pointless global maneuvering towards war against both nations and the beautiful side of the spirit of humanity. Wisdom comes not from being on the Forbes billionaires list, which is a veritable case study in sociopathy and clumsy corporate brutality. Only one of the world's richest people has ever been called a sage, and that's for his long-term stock picks. A skill that makes money, but ignores the soul-destroying companies and chains that have infected every part of human existence. From the crowded, muddy streets of Lagos to the vulgar real estate towers of Vancouver or New York City. Wisdom is not taught and is not honored. A lot of reactionary therapy industry jargon like trauma and journey has replaced wisdom as a human goal of achievement. Our philosophy departments teach nothing to nobody, serving as little more than farm teams for the next YouTube cult leader basket case. Science, or simply the human use and development of knowledge and technology, is mostly used to poison wildlife exterminate insects, fill our atmosphere with devastating levels of carbon, test lipstick on terrified rabbits in fluorescent lamp laboratories, and lock most of the world's population into a dead-end existence of voluntary surveillance, boardroom-computed consumer debt, and constant anxiety about a million things that simply don't matter enough to think about. Because who on God's scorched earth in 50 years will know or care about Joe Rogan or Kanye West or 2 years of face mask rules during a respiratory disease pandemic? The Beijing Winter Olympics opening ceremony and its humiliated ethnic minorities forced to bow to their destroyer. A temporary shortage of corn syrup and sodium processed foods in the grocery aisles, or whether a tennis player somewhere got a vaccine. No one will care about that. Nobody. At best, these will be footnotes in an exhaustive and exhausting history of the 2020s, with a foreword by whatever's left of the brains of Jordan Peterson and maybe Reese Witherspoon, connected to an artificial intelligence text generator. Wisdom doesn't mean you don't know what's going on, and you don't care what's happening. Thich Nhat Hanh left his monastery back home, where he had committed to spend a life in quiet Zen practice, because he was compelled to do something about the vicious and ludicrous war against the Vietnamese people that late Imperial France had shrugged off to the underutilized United States war industry. Roomfuls of smirking American reporters would cackle and shout him down when he attempted to address the people of the United States directly in press conferences in the United States, to let them know what was being done to human beings in their name. But that's the common response, the kind of garbage that always gets thrown at somebody who believes religion and philosophy mean something in the real world. Wisdom, we can gather, means knowing when not to bother, when to shut up, when to not have the answer. Wisdom means choosing your battles and generally not choosing to make life a battle. Enough of that comes of its own accord, no matter how relaxed your personal vibe. Wisdom is knowing in your heart that nobody's ever completely wise, that is only a matter of contrast. Such are the rumors, at least. I've looked for wisdom and rarely found anything that matched the old hype. But whenever anything hints at wisdom, it always hints at the foolish, too, the fool. There's an old roadrunner that shares a piece of land with me out in the desert, and it's alert to everything, never off guard, always on the watch, always on top of it. And yet this roadrunner consistently forgets the difference between an open patio door and a closed one. A quarter century ago, I was living in the Balkans, and at the invitation of a friend who grew up there, I worked on this straight-to-video movie. I guess most movies are straight-to-video now. Well, this one was an Albanian language comedy feature about the beloved Mullah Nasruddin, the Sufi philosopher known throughout the Muslim world, and supposedly living during the last years of the fractured Seljuk Turk Empire, maybe the 13th century. But Nasruddin is claimed as a native of a dozen lands, from Afghanistan to Iran to the Muslim Turk towns of Albania and Kosovo. It was on the border between the old Yugoslav state of Macedonia, now called Northern Macedonia because the Greeks weren't happy with the confusion, and the province of Kosovo, then a disputed land at the root of the simmering Kosovo-Serbian War. That's where we shot our movie, in little villages that were a little change from Nasruddin's time. We had a delightful comic actor whose name I've sadly forgotten, and he had done work in various regional productions for a while. But the money was so bad that he'd gone to England to work in restaurants and bars. And through this English period, had deeply studied the works of great comedians like Peter Sellers and Dudley Moore, the whole Goon Squad crew, and of course Monty Python and all that. The comedy of the wise fool, or foolish sage, or just a plain moron with a funny way about him. Although I later remembered enough to know that Dua Lipa's first name means love or my love, a common term of endearment in the Kosovo-Albanian language, I did not speak or comprehend Albanian beyond a handful of phrases and useful terms for the traveler. Of course, I was put in charge of writing the script, based on my friend Samet reading me a popular collection of Nasruddin folktales, which he translated on the fly. We came up with a script based on a typical Nasruddin adventure of traveling through a town and causing various outrages, teaching various lessons. And our English-speaking Kosovar lead actor translated back to Albanian, apparently much improving my version, as a small crew had a hard time not laughing once action was called. We had a lovely scene of the women at an old stone well, an ancient scene cast in a thousand stories, from the tales of Nasruddin to the tales of Moses. We had donkeys braying and ravens calling from the red tile rooftops. And speaking of donkeys, we had a scene that worked out very well, with Nasruddin riding a jackass backwards through the village. And our extras, the people of the village in their traditional national dress, usually safe for festivals, were all gaping from their doorways and windows, astounded. It was all wonderful, the experience at least, and we turned in an edited final cut of something like 90 minutes to our investors in Switzerland, who proceeded to get the movie on videotape to every video store serving an Albanian-speaking clientele throughout Western Europe. Germany, Austria, Switzerland, anywhere Albanians and Kosovar Albanians had emigrated for a better economic future, if not a better life. Many such people, including the singer Dua Lipa and her family, went back to the old country part or full time once the Republic of Kosovo won its independence. Anyway, a Nasruddin story would go something like this. Mullah Nasruddin arrived in town one hot day and was invited to deliver a sermon at the Sufi temple. Addressing the congregation, he asked, "Does anyone here know what I'm about to say?" The audience replied, "No." and he looked upon them with disappointment. "Well, I'm not going to waste my time speaking to people who don't even know what I'm talking about," he said, and departed. Another time, Nasruddin was taking a shortcut through the cemetery, and he came upon a crowd of mourners at a gravesite. One of them said loudly, "Today we have buried an honest man and a politician." Nasruddin answered them, "I did not know times were so hard that you're burying two people in the same grave." This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. Fresh new soundscapes tonight from our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. And this particular episode was recorded in Los Angeles at Oz Tyler's Muse Lighthouse Studios. You can enjoy this program on many fine community radio stations, not just in the desert Southwest, but all the way from KCAW, KCAW Radio up in Sitka, Alaska, to Black Sheep Radio, WOOL Wool FM, way back east in Vermont. But the times being what they are, it's likely you're listening on your podcast device, which is just a whole fraught topic now. Podcast? Who needs all that? Here at Desert Oracle, we do radio. Listen how you like, and spare us all the trouble that goes with the podcast realm. It's warm already, and we will see how that holds through the season, which still says winter on the calendar, but sure feels like a warm spring. I hope the wildflowers are starting to come up a little wherever you are. I hope you get a chance to spend some time in America's desert wilderness real soon, even if not real often. Hey, and listen to this. Our Desert Oracle Volume 1 paperback is on the SoCal bestsellers list for the second week in a row. If you haven't got a copy for yourself, stop by your neighborhood bookseller and pick up one or two. Thank you for listening. Enjoy whatever you're doing outside under the big desert sky. And good night from the voice of the desert.
We are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGBM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Our second episode today was produced by Ken Lane, February 3rd, 2023. This is a curious and historic telling of a story behind the story of the Green Comet that was so visible that year. Did you get to see it? The title is The Green Comet.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
What could it be? There was no balloon and there were no aeronauts. some strange phenomenon that occurred in the higher zones of the atmosphere, a phenomenon of which neither the nature nor the cause could be explained. Today it appeared over America. 48 hours afterwards, it was over Europe. A week later, it was in Asia. Hence, in every country of the world empire, or kingdom, or republic, there was anxiety which it was important to allay. If you hear in your house strange and inexplicable noises, do you not at once endeavor to discover the cause? And if your search is in vain, do you not leave your house and take up your quarters in another? But in this case, the house was the terrestrial globe. There are no means of leaving that house for the moon or Mars or Venus or Jupiter or any other planet of the solar system. And so of necessity, we have to find out what it is that takes place. Not in the infinite void, but within the atmospherical zones. In fact, if there is no air, there is no noise, and as there was a noise, that famous trumpet, the phenomenon must occur in the air, the density of which invariably diminishes. Naturally, the newspapers took up the question in their thousands and treated it in every form, throwing on it both light and darkness, recording many things about it, true or false, alarming and tranquilizing their readers as the sale required, and almost driving ordinary people mad. But at one blow, party politics dropped unheeded, and the affairs of the world went on none the worse for it. But what could this thing be? There was not an observatory that was not applied to. If an observatory could not give a satisfactory answer, what was the use of observatories? Astronomers who doubled and tripled the stars 100,000 million miles away could not explain a phenomenon occurring only a few miles off. What was the use of astronomers? The observatory of Paris was very guarded in what it said, and the mathematical section they had not thought the statement worth noticing. In the meridional section, they knew nothing about it. In the physical observatory, they had not come across it. Jules Verne, Robur the Conqueror, 1886. Has fallen on the desert. And you're listening to Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting out of Joshua Tree, California. Soundscapes by Red Blue Black Silver. Astronomer George Ellery Hale was born in a booming Chicago in 1868. And thanks to the Great Fire that transformed the old wooden city, Hale's father had made a fortune building elevators for the city's new buildings of steel and stone. And so the young George grew up in comfort with his whims encouraged by his parents. Books, microscopes, and then telescopes were his passion, along with a love for the outdoors, the natural world, for fishing, for hunting, swimming in the summer, and ice skating in winter when the lakes and rivers froze. George Hale was, his biographer states, particularly drawn to the tales of adventures set in the mountains of California by the French writer Jules Verne. Jules Verne was the biggest writer of his time. His fantastic adventure novels immediately translated into English and another dozen languages. His stories of technological thrills and incredible travels, especially appealing to the young men of the time, during an age of absolute marvels. Railroads and telegraph lines were rapidly connecting and changing the old, slower-paced world. Electricity lit up beautiful new neighborhoods in the cities. Flight was attempted in hot air balloons. And biologists were bringing back specimens of species that seemed monstrous. Like many visionaries, Verne's fictions tended to play out in real life not long after his ideas got into the public consciousness. And so the great mystery airship flap of the 1890s, in large part affecting the night skies over San Francisco and Sacramento, seemed to be the real-life version of his Robur the Conqueror, who put the world into a panic with fantastic machines that could shoot through the skies as easily as they could dive beneath the seas. But George Ellery Hale aspired to create such wonders in his world, the real world, and not in books. And if such technological and scientific innovations took him on adventures in the California mountains, all the better. Hale was a true scholar and scientific pioneer, studying while innovating at MIT and Harvard, and then becoming a very young professor at the new University of Chicago. He founded a number of prominent observatories and mentored such astronomers as Edwin Hubble. And as is often the case with a true genius, he was troubled by depression, by migraines, by anxious insomnia. The long, gloomy winters of Chicago and New England and Western Europe, where he studied and invented at a manic pace, left him especially glum. Which is why the usually dry, clear winter skies of the California wilderness appealed so much. For his great telescopes, he flitted about from one western peak to another, looking for the perfect spot and using several of them. The peaks of Flagstaff, the San Bernardino Mountains, Wilson's Peak over Pasadena, and eventually Palomar Mountain. A high ridge separating most of San Diego County from the deserts beyond. Hale was compelled to keep collecting honors, keep breaking ground on new scientific marvels, but his psychological condition worsened. And finally, his doctors demanded that he take that fashionable cure of the early 20th century, the European tour. Even though he'd already been to Europe and studied in Europe and lived in Berlin, in 1911, on holiday in France, George Hale was not finding relaxation. Instead, the ringing in his ears had intensified. And during another sleepless night, a small humanoid entity appeared before him. It was, Hale said, a little demon. And it was there to advise Hale on a course of action. The demon, described by one of Hale's biographers as an elf, would bond more deeply to Hale during a stay in Egypt later in 1911. It would later offer specific advice regarding the Mount Wilson Observatory and the new site at Palomar Mountain, which would become home to the largest telescope in the world. The fourth largest telescope in a row that Hale would design. That telescope, the last one, built with a 200-inch circle of Corning glass, remained the largest optical telescope in the world for a half century after its debut in 1948, which was a decade after Hale's death. Exhausted, worn out, and ready for rest at the age of 69. A lot of people first heard about George Ellery Hale's decades-long relationship with his little demon in an episode of the television show The X-Files in the 1990s, in which Fox Mulder describes a little elf climbing through a window and interrupting Hale's solo game of billiards, telling him to get the $6 million necessary for the Palomar scope from the Rockefeller Foundation, which Hale did in 1928. The episode, if you're interested, is called Little Green Men. Telescope is an astronomical workhorse to this day, doing nightly science work whenever the skies are clear over Palomar Mountain, an average of 290 nights per year. And it was only last year, in March of 2022, that such work by the astronomers Frank Maskey and Bryce Bolin resulted in the discovery of a previously unknown comet. A green comet with the designation C/20 and 22 E3 ZTF, which has thrilled the world this week as it makes its closest pass to Earth. Visible in the northern skies, especially in the hours after sunset and before dawn. All the popular astronomy apps can help point you in the right direction, and it can be seen with the naked eye in the dark skies of the Mojave Desert especially. Not the Walmart parking lot in Yucca Valley, I mean. Binoculars will make a difference. Astronomy is quick to add such data to a worldwide network available not just to scholars and researchers, but to anybody with a cell phone. So take advantage of this opportunity if you can, if you have not already, because it's not very often that the use of a cell phone is exciting or inspirational. If you get a look at the Green Comet, give a thought to the last time humans spied this strange sight. It was during the Stone Age, as we call it now, some 50,000 years ago. The Green Comet has also developed what astronomers call an anti-tail, according to spaceweather.com. It's described as a phenomenon which causes a comet to appear to have a second forward-facing tail. In the Stone Age, we probably would have called a forward-facing tail a phallus, but these are puritanical times. The astrology apps are still a little slow with such stuff. In the old days, whether the Stone Age or the height of the Roman Empire, the appearance of an unknown comet had immediate repercussions. Was it heralding a new plague? A famine? Or as we say today, a global supply chain disruption? The White House hasn't had an official astrologer since the Reagan administration, so they're probably as much in the dark as anyone using CoStar or The Pattern. But I did find one astrological analysis of the Green Comet's return from a well-written and interesting website called Oxford Astrologer. And I'll quote from the relevant entry. So what was happening 50,000 years ago? One is that the megafauna started dying off and not being replaced. Cave bears, saber-toothed cats, the woolly mammoths. Might have been climate pressure, meteorites, disease, we still don't know. This went on until most of the megafauna was gone about 10,000 years ago. The other thing is that one of several hominid species without any anatomical changes to their skulls suddenly started acting differently. They successfully colonized new continents, invented things of new complexity, made art, developed nuanced language, and left traces suggesting that they created stories to explain the world to themselves. This might have been due to developing a voice box, of needing to hunt smaller game, to to experiment more with risky plant foods, with population pressures. We still don't know. A variety of human species existed then, not only in Africa, but in Asia, Australia, and Europe for hundreds of thousands of years. A mere 300,000 years ago or so, one mongrel species emerged from the meeting and mingling. And starting around 50,000 to 60,000 years ago, this species reached out and took over the world. Quoted from the website OxfordAstrologer.com. Might be a useful one to bookmark. Maybe the strange, unsteady vibe of early 20 and 23 is par for the course in this time of steady global shocks that we all have to know about immediately. Regardless if they really affect our own daily lives. But one thing is for sure, as the population of the Earth, the human population, reaches its peak, the engine for economic and industrial growth all these centuries leading up to now has broken down. It will keep working for a while, but the frontiers are few for such reliable economic engines as the old emerging markets. We can no longer count on more consumers being born and raised. Maybe the green comet is a marker for the next 50,000 years. A 50,000 year period when we figure out how to do things in the other direction. A greener world, as the Generation Z climate activists always say. I wonder what the green comet of the year 52,023 will see here on Earth from its next flyby. Its next flyby. Past our wonderful planet of marvels. Isaacs and across the great Mojave Wilderness, you've been listening to Desert Oracle Radio. We heard some new soundscapes tonight by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. I'm your host, Ken Lane. And our closing theme is by Pierre Langer. Hey, it's the King of the Hammers off-road parade race. I don't know if it's a race or a parade. But it's going to be a lot busier coming and going to the high desert over this weekend. So give yourself a little more time and don't get into a drag race with a giant RV pulling a trailer full of dune buggies and motorcycles. Just be patient. You'll get there. You'll get there. The new issue of Desert Oracle, Winter 2023, is getting close to done, I can say, with something like, well, not confidence, but evidence, I guess. So I'm hoping these will still be shipping out at the end of this month. Meanwhile, on Saturday, February 11th, I will be telling some desert stories, especially about Death Valley and that wonderful region. At 2 p.m., Saturday, February 11th, at the Shoshone Museum in the beautiful village of Shoshone on the road headed up to Death Valley. And February 27th, there's Alta Journal event at Skylight Books in Los Angeles. Look up Alta Journal to RSVP if you want to go to that. It's a panel thing. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
My thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. Please call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 1-406-404-6246. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Till next week, stay well and sweet dreams.